This is going to be another episode of the Best Damn League Show period. Obviously, that is not Dom, as I always say at the beginning. He was on the last one, actually. And this time, it's not even the other people who aren't Dom. It's not Zabatine, it's not Jensen Gore. Because what I thought I'd do is, obviously, it is cool to have some of those people back. But actually, one thing I've liked about this series is, because there's so many things happening week to week to week, I like to get some fresh eyes. So if people don't know, Memento here is a player who actually was in the LEC. He was a jungler. You probably maybe know him when he was on Schalke at one point in time. And before that, I mean, I'll give the brief wrap. Basically, he was an up-and-coming jungler. He made his name on Rockhat. Actually, he was one of the bad Rockhats. That's actually why people gave him a lot of credit. It looked like he was kind of carrying them. Then he went to Schalke with Dylan Falco. And the problem is, it's kind of a tragedy. Split started so well, then it dropped off. Basically, whether true or not, people scapegoated Memento here. He was replaced. I mean, to be fair, he was replaced by like Trick, who was like an MVP of the LEC and had won the championship. And basically beyond that, he played for a number of years more up until last year. He was in other smaller leagues, ERLs, etc. And now he is coaching Nord Esports, right? Was that a fair Memento? I don't think I was too unreasonable with that.
No, I think that's pretty fair. It is true. I did play in the LEC and then I did get benched by Trick back then. And I think I was scapegoated. But it's so long in the past.
Yes.
And it's kind of my bad because I'm not really a public figure.
No. You never tried to speak out against it. I think the only time you ever spoke out was you sort of implied like you did have some sort of like issue. Like I think if people don't know, I'm guessing you maybe had some nerve issues in the games or something, right?
No, I mean, do you want to go over it real quick?
Yeah, just briefly. Yeah, just give me your thoughts. Yeah.
No, so I think for me, I always played like in these Rocket teams, Giants. Basically, what I would say is like, it's kind of like loser's mentality, where everyone is used to just losing. So you get this like, you learn how to cope with it. So when you lose, it's almost expected. So you kind of have this like positive mindset, your teammates are nice, and it's kind of like, let's give our best for the next games and let's continue grinding. Guys, sure. It's okay. You get the pat on the back. And those are the teammates that I was used to because I played like in Giants. I did play with Schalke and we qualified. That was when I played with Upset. Then in Schalke, what really hit me hard was I was in a team with like full winner's mindset. There was like Odoamne, there was Upset, there was Abedaga. I mean, Abedaga was like a rookie. He was really whatever back then. And the thing is, I never actually were in that kind of team environment where everyone didn't give a shit about your feelings or didn't give a shit about like you. If you perform bad, everyone just flames you and they try to replace you. That's it. But I was used to like back in the days, it was like if you play bad, then your teammate comes to you and he's like, all right, let's see, you can do this. But let's look for a solution and stuff. And that pressure just kind of hit me way too hard. And I was not ready for it, honestly. And looking back at it now, I just think I was too immature and not used to that kind of like winning mentality mindset. Now, there were some like, I was treated a bit unfairly, but it's all right. That's at least my conclusion for it.
No. By the way, the reason I also said you were scapegoat, look, I'm sure if I go back, there'll be some mistakes in the games, but there's two things.
Yeah.
One is the problem is the step up here was crazy too. Like you say, Rockhat was never ever supposed to win ever. So if you ever did anything good, it was like, yeah, that's not bad. Whereas the problem here is people might know Schalke was at this position where they thought they were contending for Worlds at this point in time from this kind of a run. So, and those players you just listed, some of those people have been to the top or some of the best players. So they expect that. Like they won't tolerate anything less. And this is before the days where people had subs in and out. So at the time, people just ruthlessly cut. Like if they thought they had to cut, you just ruthlessly get cut. And then the Reddit narrative follows you, etc. Yeah, I know what you mean. But if people are wondering why he's on this episode, it's because he actually is one of the few people who's a pro and who watches the games and tweets about them. And actually, I've noticed you have pretty good analysis, mate. Like I've noticed you don't really do, I mean, you're Swedish, you don't really do a very like sort of flame style. You're doing sort of more like, you know, even keeled, level-headed analysis. But I also thought that would pair really well with me because, spoiler, I'll bring all the flame for two of us. Don't worry about it. So let's get into LEC, shall we? Because everyone's trashing this region at the moment, Memento, saying all the games are bad and the level's low and all that. And look, I agree to some degree. But at the same time, one thing I'll say is this. There have been, like, for example, when we get into this one here, like, that Fnatic Vitality series, there were some bangers. There's some exciting games. Listen, even when they're bad, like, I mean, Heretics Fnatic, there's some games there where the team that loses can win. Like, as much as, we can flame it, if we're in the bubble of EU, we've got to look at the best players, the best teams and see what they're doing. So I'll tell you where we'll start. Let's just start. Obviously, we watch all the series. Let's start with Team Heretics because, mate, this is a team where, on past episodes, I always said, I've had to reserve so much sort of, like, hope for this this team, because even though they have, like, what happened is this series was perfect the way it played out. Same with the SK Gamer series. What they'll do with this team is they'll give you like a game and a half of a series where you're like, they're pretty good, actually. Yeah. You know what? Like, the Zeros have the glow up. Like, sometimes they can team fight even. Like, draft's all right sometimes. They'll get in these games, but they'll all, what they seem to do is they always betray you in, like, one big game. There's always, like, a game on the fine point there, and they blow it somewhere. What have you thought of this squad? Because I know it's been a bit of a mess with the roster, but like I say, I actually think the thing is, if we're going to accept that everyone except G2 isn't that good, I actually think the pack below them is way closer than people seem to realize. Like, there is a world here where SK could have beaten Heretics, but maybe Heretics could have beaten Fnatic, and then Vitality could have been, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's so many sort of this peaks bit. So what have you thought of Heretics?
No, I mean, Heretics, honestly, to me, I just think they're a team that lacks a lot of firepower. Even changing, like, perks, I don't think he necessarily played that bad. I think perks, like, last year, we have a lot of, like, criticism, which was valid. He had a, like, pretty bad year overall.
Yes.
But this year, I think he was actually performing quite well, and it looked like he was actually back in his form. They had, like, a lot of good wins in the early season, but going back to winter. And then the whole off-season drama happened, where he gets benched and they bring in Zviro. But to me, I think Zviro has been like a really pleasant surprise.
Yeah.
Like, if we watch the Team Heretics versus Fnatic series, that guy was like the only guy actually performing and looking like he wants to win. And he's taking responsibility in the games as well. He's not one of those, you know, we see this a lot with like rookies coming in and they're like, oh shit, I don't want to die. I don't want to look bad. Yeah. So I'm just going to farm. No, this guy is...
He's gone in on some of the Azir shuffles, hasn't he? He's gone like fully in. Yeah, I agree.
But just to check, can I swear on the...
Yes, of course. I'm going to do it loads, don't worry.
Yeah, okay, perfect. But he's just fucking caring. Like, absolutely. Like, everyone else is just... I hate these rookies when they come in. I think we saw it, like, last year. I don't want to shit talk too many pro players, right?
Sure.
But we see, like, when Blue was in SK or when these kind of rookies, when they come in, the only objective they have is almost like, I'm going to try to look as good as possible so I can get an offer for next year.
Yes.
But when Zviro comes in, he's a rookie, right? But I think he's been ready for, like, maybe the past 2 years. And he's coming in and he's actually looking hella good. Like, in the series in Team Heretics versus Fnatic, he was like this shining light of Team Heretics. And honestly, like, the first game when I look at Fnatic, and one thing I will say, like, regarding how much hate there is towards the EU region, which I think is fair, but let's be fair as well, because we watched, like, Damwon versus Gen.G, five-game series where we have, like, Paze flashing in, like, ulting in with Kai'Sa, then he flashes out, like, perfectly, Rakan, and Cannon comes in and does, like, a perfect kick. And then you go, like, to Team Heretics versus Fnatic.
Of course.
Like, Razork does a level 3 gank mid, dies under turret. And then, like, Wunder has Bami, Cinder goes under turret and dies. And then after that, they, like, contest Herald, and then they just die as well. And it's just, like, the level, if we didn't watch, like, let's say we didn't watch the LCK, we would be like, oh, LCK is looking good, actually.
Yeah.
It's normal mistakes, like, that's all good. But the mistakes that are happening in the LEC are just so basic. It's like things that we discovered 5 years ago. You know, like, let's not take a number disadvantage fight.
Yes.
Let's not fight when we're behind an item.
Without, like, the package, all that shit. Yeah, of course, everything, yes.
Super simple stuff. And that's why the hate is, like, really coming. I think it is a bandwagon, of course. Like, people want to farm likes on Twitter. And, of course, like, it's famous to hate on EU, so everyone's going to do it. But I had given up on hope, like, on the LEC actually contesting internationally until I saw the G2 series. But I'll stick on the Team Heretics and Fnatic for now. But in that series, like, Fnatic as a team, they have no idea how to lose a game slowly. And this is a trend I keep seeing with them. Because even in the Team Heretics series, like, Razork does that really int gank on mid, he dies, right? But they actually recover quite nicely. And Razork finds, like, really good angles on bot lane afterwards, and they actually come back in their game, the game state is even. And then you see Oscarini, like, go for a proxy when he knows that Jarvan is topside and he just gives a kill, and it's like, what is happening? And even though, like, Humanoid was able to actually get ahead and get some free kills, he had a 700 goal shutdown, which he gave to Zviro afterwards.
Oh, sure.
The game state is fine. It's like, it's even. It's like, it's okay, guys. We can still win. And then they're like, you know what? We have to double down and go.
They always force it, don't they? You know what I get the vibe about is this. The story goes, like, everyone knows that G2 wins all the scrims as well as all the official games, right? Everyone else thinks Fnatic should be the obvious contender, right? But, dude, I get the feeling, no joke, like, now they almost, like, play just like it's a scrim in the LEC game. Like, this is what you do in a scrim. You just go, like, fuck it, just keep going. Because you can go next always, can't you? But because if you think about it, right, the problem Fnatic has, without going too far from the Rex thing, because we're talking directly in this series here, is, mate, this is why all these series are always close. On the last episode, I actually said about Fnatic, my real fear is this. I do think they're probably the only team that can beat G2, but I don't know if they're going to get there. Like, I even did predict, I thought they're going to get wrecked by BDS. I mean, I think just tactically, that's the perfect team to sort of wait and catch the throw, if you know what I mean. Back on the Heretics thing, though.
Yeah.
I would just say this. I definitely agree on the Zviru one. I actually thought in the split, this is why narratives on Reddit are so powerful. In the split, everyone was doing that thing where it's like, he's way better than Perks. It's like, is he? Like, in the split, it looked like actually he was doing more like you were saying, like a rookie. His job almost was like, don't die. In other words, don't be Perks and then don't get the blame. And then what happened was, that allowed the team to look pretty decent. Like, they had some more at macro late in the game. They could fight sometimes. Obviously, they have the players to do that. The problem is, in the playoffs, he has had the globe. Like, even when people are going to say, yeah, but most of the games are on Azir. Mate, I'm watching Nuclear Int, who's been in the LEC years now, play Azir every game, and he isn't doing this stuff. He's playing way more conservative. He's not doing... I agree with you, mate. That's the other thing. You could play Azir or a mage and be a pussy and just fucking hide and use it to get out and always just dodge it. He's doing those sick moves. Like, look, he isn't Chovy, but he does, like, he tries his own version. He'll go, like, right in the back of the fight with the fucking... I love that when people do that. And for a rookie, I agree with you. You can tell, for real, this guy was waiting. But he was waiting the way a pro should. Wait for your chance. And when they give you your chance, mate, forget all that shit of like secure your salary. Just go for it. It's the playoffs, mate. Just go for it. And I have to say, I agree with you. He's one of the main reasons they could really have been like fourth or third. Like, who knows? But they could have been much further in the playoffs for me.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think so too. I mean, Team Heretics had a lot of like potential, I would say. But if you look back at it, like even versus the SK series, it wasn't a clean series. It was like Niski actually ulting into the... I think that was the famous Corki, you know.
Almost and every game, like, he was dying first blood or something. It was crazy, yeah.
And it wasn't like Team Heretics were like outsmarting them, playing better. No, I mean, SK were just inting. And that's another story about SK, but they're out of playoffs, so no one cares right now.
Sure.
But Team Heretics, like when Jankos is actually on his form and he looks good, then the team looks good. And Zviru is doing his job and he's actually... playing really well. I even thought like Wonder was actually having quite a good split. I think most of his, like, he seemed like he was coming back to his old form. I wouldn't say like his full old form, but he was looking good. But the issue I have with them as well is this like lack of firepower. I think like Flakked, right? You think about him. I see him on like 5-0 Zeri. I'm not thinking like, oh, this guy is gonna completely take over the game. He's gonna like flash in 1v3 quadra kill like Noah does, you know, when he's playing Zeri. I think like, oh, Flakked 5-0. That's nice. He's going to be stable. He's going to be good, which is not bad. But it's like the lack of that firepower, of that like being able to team fight, out to maneuver your opponents. That's just what they seem to be lacking. And I also don't want to see like, I mean, Trimby on Renato did not also look that good. I think he's much better on like some engaged champion. And I think they really need that. But going back to it, I think Jankos had a very underwhelming series versus Fnatic and was kind of one of the key series why they weren't able to actually win versus them. I think like first game he was doing fine, even though Razork was like the one actually running it down, even from the level 3, like on mid. But Jankos wasn't even shining in that way. And the second game was like what really hits me when I see Jankos do play like Mauke, he's going like blue, wolves, red buff, and he's just like two levels down or like a level down on Razork the entire game. And Razork just finding these like angles the entire game. And then, I mean, if we can go also to game 3, then I think it was just a complete jungle diff where Razork does first the bot lane gank, like lane gank successfully. And then he goes top and dives Wonder in front of Jankos when he's at Krugs. And it's just, I don't know if this is a trend, but everyone who plays against Razork, they just look completely garbage. And I don't know if it's like Razork is one of the best junglers for sure. He might even be the best jungler that we have in the region right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, ultimately, I think it comes down to those two things when it comes to Team Heretics and the lack of firepower and then being out jungled kind of.
Yeah, I will say on that one, that's one of those ones where you think to yourself, it's Jankos, mate. He's fucking covered lanes against the best junglers of all time and beating them even sometimes. But I get the vibe for real. There's another guess I'm going to make as someone who's known the pro scene. That also looks to me like Fnatic's just shit on Heretics in a million scrims too. And then he's just been, Razork's just done the demon mode where you just from minute one just wreck the other guy's jungle and take every guy. And it makes it look like Jankos even just went in the game thinking that, like, essentially, like, I can't just play as myself. Because, I thought he was... I agree. Actually, if anything, if you could have told Jankos how Razork was actually going to play, I feel like he'd have just played a way more controlled game, taking less chances, and they'd have caught the throw. But he almost played like he was desperate. He actually had to do this like weird shit. And then I definitely agree on the firepower one. It's an obvious point at this point in time, but the gamble I made when I thought this team could be good when they announced the roster at the beginning of the year was the gamble. It is what he's told us all in interviews, guys, which is that Wonder only was weak side in all those years because he had the bot lane, didn't he? He either had like fucking Reckless or Perks and Mickey X, or he had Upset. If you have these players, yeah, you probably should weak side. Actually, you're one of the best hybrid top lanes we've ever had. The problem is we were supposed to believe on this team when Flackett arrives. By the way, probably the best guy to be the weak side ADC and just be that go even bot lane. It's supposed to be your time, wonder. You're supposed to be like all pro LEC. He didn't do that. Like, he had good games, I agree with you, but the key thing is he has good games on stuff like a Cassante, you know what I mean? He's not playing like the super carry top. He's not going to be the Jace player. And so I agree with you. When you don't do that, Flackhead, like you say, definitely. If you watch the LPL, the LCK guys, the second I see like Jackie Love on two kills, or like up a Viper on like a three kill Zeri, I'm like, right, get the popcorn out, mate. Even if they lose this one, he's going fucking ham. He's like Neo in the Matrix now. He can do anything in this game. I agree. If Flackhead gets the kills, you're like, oh, cool. He's actually ahead this game.
That's great.
Yeah, but I agree. But once you get to the team fight, you're actually putting all the pressure on this Ryu guy as well. He basically has to carry the team fight at that point in time, right?
Yeah, I mean, he has to be the one to step up. And he actually did it. I mean, in the game two, he was also having a great game. He was like 7-1 on Azir. But unfortunately, the rest of the team was just kind of gapped, honestly. Like,
yes.
Only Zvyro was the only hope of the team. And then, of course, like, he is playing extremely aggressive. He still makes the mistakes in teamfights where he's like getting caught off guard or getting hit by like a CC where he shouldn't be. But overall, like, I really like the mindset, and it's really refreshing to see someone try to take some risk and try to actually carry games and not just sit back like we see with other rookies and just try to like hope that things will go well. You know, I have Wonder, I have Jankos. I don't need to do anything. Let me just lift off my hands and see what happens. But it's refreshing. I think it gives a lot of hope for, I mean, I wouldn't say like the full ERL system, but
sure. At
least for Zvyro, I think that was a good split from him showing. And in the playoffs, we really saw him like pop off. And he shouldn't even be the one that actually pops off.
No, of course.
Like,
it's
not his responsibility. He shouldn't be the one that like shines. Yes. It should be the rest of the team, but he was the one shining. So.
I'll even add this in. I give him extra props, mate, because he's starting in spring split. Like, even other rookies had the winter split to sort of charge up and get going. Yeah. He has to just come in immediately, perform. If he didn't, by the way, they've got Perks on the bench. Maybe they bring him back. Like, the pressure's big if you're this guy. But I think he's lived up to it. I agree. And I also do think, whether or not he's on this team next year, I'm pretty sure another team takes a gamble on him. If I'm like an XL or something, why wouldn't I potentially consider this guy as talent? And then I'd also say, we haven't mentioned it except for the champion pool there, but obviously this is one of those series, by the way, where don't even bother opening the Reddit thread. It's just a bandwagon of like 500 comments about Trippion Alistair, and that's all they say, bro. They don't even they don't analyze what he did. First of all, guys, Alistair, by definition, you're just going in, and if it's not the right angle, you're getting fucked. Like, it's not like you have like a fucking dash to get out after that. You've gone in, and also, look, I do think actually he did in that Alistair game, obviously, but it wasn't only him. I'm with you. Jankos wasn't playing well, by the way. Jungle fucking support. What is the synergy, guys? Also, mate, Flackhead had there was one moment in the series where he just walked me like just to get wrecked. Like, what? It's not like Trimby mind controlled me to do that. So I agree, Trimby definitely had a bad one there. But my issue here is this. If he wasn't added to this team, they're not even at this point. Like, this team was pretty bad. I think them adding him did open up things like his champion pool, changes what you can do with the draft. I do think it changed the bot lane dynamic. Definitely, if taking out Perks, you have to add shot calling, guys. Like, if you might not think Perks is good with your eye test, this guy's one of the best shot callers ever. Like, he definitely knows what he wants to do, what to call to make. Whereas actually, if people don't know, if you've ever heard the comms, the Jankos style of shot calling is more like the question. It's like, can we do this? Like, should I come here now? It's like, that's not the same as being the guy of, like, we're doing this. So like group now, like fight now. Yes, and re-engage, you know. So I'll take the odd Trimby int game because that wasn't what made them not make top four this tournament, guys. Like, there was other things before. I mean, they could have won these series clean if they wanted. I agree with you. The other problem, if you're Heretics, is even though we're saying you could have done all this, in a way, you sort of deserve to lose here though, because like I said, you could have lost SK too. Like, you just played so messy the whole time. It's just the sad thing is, even though there are positives to take, I just actually feel like, I want to ask you this, bearing in mind, now we've got the MSI break, and in theory, it's hard because it costs money, but in theory, you could still make one roster move if you're this team. You could bring someone in. The tricky thing is though, mate, I feel like, even though I agree, I would just make, listen, it's going to be a hard cut. Whoever you cut, you have to cut someone and gamble on some talent, probably an ERL talent, but you have to hope you get a carry. The problem is, who the fuck do you cut though? That's the hard part now, right? Who would you cut?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I don't think there are many potential like players that you could take that would actually upgrade the roster. Like, who do you actually replace? Are you going to replace Wonder? I mean, not really. Who other top laners are there? As Zvyro was already doing good, I think you keep that guy. Yeah. And then if you want to look at like AD carry replacements, I mean, I don't even know if there's any like decent AD carry that's a free agent.
Yeah, the problem is it's also free agent. Like, if anyone's going to go, just get like crown shots. Like, that's not going to be free. BDS isn't just going to give him for free. So it'd have to be someone like, is Neon even playing? You know what I mean? It'd have to be someone like that, wouldn't it? And they're usually on ERL teams, you know.
But do you really want to have like crown shot in that team if you think about it? Like, you have Trimby already being a leader shot caller. You have crown shot also being known for being a shot caller. And then we have Jankos, and then you have Wonder. Like,
sure.
I think that's just going to be a complete fiesta. Yes. Like, they need someone like just silent who shuts the, well, is quiet and just performs. Like, he is, you use your hands and we'll take care of the rest. Because they have smart players. They're able to play the game. And going back on like Trimby, yes, okay, his Alistar game, people are just looking at his last moment, which was when he W'd the Zac into his team. And then they're like, holy shit, this guy is so boosted. But it's like, guys, he actually like got them all this way. Like, did you see how Heretics were playing last split? Like, did you see how much he did the entire split? But that's the thing about esports. It's like, people will only remember your last possible moment. And then they will make the entire, like, painting.
They rewrite the back, so it was always like that. History becomes whatever the last one was, isn't it?
So it'll be like, oh, should we sign Trimby? No, but didn't he W Alistar? Like, didn't he W the Zac into his team? And now that guy's terrible. And then they just move on, like, we don't sign this guy. But it's like, no, that guy's really fucking great. And he's done a shit ton for his team. So, I still think he's a great player. I mean, okay, we all have int moments, but...
No, of course. Right, okay, that's Heretics. We can move past that. Let's do... Yeah. Let's get the Mad Lions out of the way. So I'll just do the obvious part at the beginning, which is people think I'm going to do what I've done in past episodes, which is because when all of us in the scene predicted Mad Lions not to be that good, and then they went all the way to the finals. Look, shout out BDS mentioned fucking Adam. But okay, still happened. They still go to the final. By the way, I'll even give them credit in the final. Way more competitive than I thought they'd be. They actually won one game. They could have won some of the others with some of the G2 ints. But with that said, to me, it was obvious you could never maintain that level of form, because if you did, then I'd have to give props actually to the org of Mad Lions, because what they have done is found the greatest crop of rookies of all time. And mate, that didn't happen. Like, first of all, think of the players they brought in who were the rookies. Almost everyone in their own way had like a glow up or looked better than he expected. Like, obviously the Merwin guy last split was like, holy fuck, who is this guy? Like, and he can play all these off-meta picks. Wonder said this on, I think, Euphoria or something, but sadly it's when a veteran can just see things you can't see, guys. When he said this, it made me realize, oh fuck, he's right, isn't he? Which is, the Merwin guy isn't bad. He's all right. Like, he can play Cassandra or something like that. He can play some of the meta picks. But the issue is, he's way better on these weird picks. But the thing about the weird picks is, because they're weird picks, it's not solo queue, guys. You can't just pick that champion. You have to make it work in a comp. So the problem you get sometimes is, sometimes he's not even trying to be a frontline. And it's like he's on all these, he's on like the fucking the TF. And that looks cool when you carry the game with it, mate. Or when he was doing Varus last split. Yeah, when you do that, it looks cool. First of all, has it worked? And also, he just played way worse this split. Then you think of the other player. The other player I was hyping was the Alvaro guy, mate. I know, sadly, everyone's got distracted by this stupid thing where the super guy thinks he is fucking like Viper or something. I don't know why that is, but I just want to tell him, bro, you're not even the best in your lane. The Alvaro guy was the truth last play. He looked fucking amazing. Well, I'll tell you what, when they're unable to just play through bot and accelerate every game, he doesn't look as sick anymore, doesn't have the same agency anymore. And then for a Scovey guy, I gave him props last split because in the playoffs he had a glow up. He had some matches where he did sort of like clutch it out, and when you were like, hey, actually, I didn't think this guy was any good. I have to say, the people I know from the RLs, that was one of the players they told me, like, I don't think he's going to be that good in LEC. He'll be all right, maybe, you know. So the issue is, when you come back down to it, they haven't got that much left. Like, a lot of what was making it work in the last split was either individual glow up, or they were like, looked so cohesive as a team. Mate, a lot of those things of like, mid-game, like, what does this team have? Like, I think they ended as a mess for me, mate. I'm actually not going to make it even that harsh. They just ended as a mess. Like, they didn't build on what happened last split. What have you thought of Mad Lions?
No, okay, so I actually have quite a theory like these rookie rosters all the time, because I've seen it happen multiple times now, like especially with even SK, because now it's like confirmed for me, because last winter as well, SK does great.
When SK first came in, yes.
Yeah, and I feel like this is a very important thing about like rookies coming in, is that Mad Lions comes in with four new rookies that no one has any data on. Like, they don't know what they play. Like, Alvaro and Supa, right? They were known, because I played against them last year, and they're a very good bot lane, but they're also very good at like fake pressuring. You know, they'll walk up even though the jungler like is in on red buff when they're red side, right? And like on the other side of the map. And the thing that happens with these rookies is that like in winter split they're really good because the enemy team doesn't have any data on them. Like, they don't know how they actually play. So when they're walking up to you and there is, you're like, holy shit, they probably have the jungler behind them, or they have a TP or something. So you respect automatically because you are not aware of how they actually play the game. And I think this is something that actually brings a lot of success to the rookie lineups in the beginning, and Mervin as well. Like, he pulls out a Fiddlesticks top. Like, who can expect that, right? You're like, holy shit, dude. And but once a split comes down, right, then you start actually seeing, like, oh, okay, by the way, he can play these kind of cheese picks. He will play this in this situation. Okay, we're prepared for that. But, like, of course, in winter, when no one has any data on how these guys play and how they're actually, what their champion pool is, then, of course, they're going to be caught off guard, and it's going to bring them some success. Like, there's not to take any credit from them, because I think they were playing really well like, back in winter.
Yeah, respect.
But I also think every other team was extremely bad at the same time.
Yes.
And now we come into the spring split, and I said, Mervin said this in the interview too. He was like, yeah, people kind of know now that how we play, and they also know our cheese picks. And it's not as big of a surprise. Like G2 as well, when they, I think it was G2 that knocked them out. But I just remember them playing the Ahri top, if you remember. Like, Mervin played Ahri top, but they were like, yeah, we expected it. We knew that he would play it. Oh, that was Vitality, my bad.
Yeah, they...
But Vitality, they were like, yeah, we expected him. We just thought that it would be AD. Like, now everyone knows exactly what he can pull out.
Yeah.
So it's not a big surprise. And also their gameplay, like playing through bot every single game. It's like, okay, let's just look to match them and let's draft a good bot lane. So you kind of like, once the more data you get on the enemy team, the easier it will be to play versus them.
Yes.
And that's where the veterancy comes in. And like, have you actually, like Spring Split is more about, have you actually improved? And have you found a way to play the game that is consistent enough to actually become top three, top four? But Mad Lions' way of playing was not consistent enough to actually become a top tier team. Like, they relied a lot on these like cheese picks, making like Super Alvaro actually having star performances. And they played really well, but at the end of the day, it's like not enough to actually be a contender. And they just have to go back like into summer right now. They have to go back and just redraw everything and try to like figure out an actual playstyle that will consistently work for them and something that they can repeat, basically.
Yeah, I would say it this way as well, because the same happens in Counter-Strike, the game I'm native analyst in, which is you get the players and the teams that suddenly do the jump up in level and they're like getting upsets, and maybe there's a map they're really good on that you think, wow, they even beat world-class. And what happens is this, fans think, oh, they're just not hitting their shots anymore. They're not winning the same duels. It's like, no, what you don't know is the other in-game leader, the equivalent of the shot caller in league, and the coach, they now know, right, this person's a threat. Put them on the fucking whiteboard. We're going to study them now. And you have to understand, guys, these coaches are literally the best in the world at breaking the game down. Like, the reason why Mad Lions was always going to be in trouble is they're going to have to now go after a big amount of VODs of LEC games and scrims against them, against Peter Dunn, Mark and Pad, like the Dylan Falco. Like, these guys aren't fucking around, guys. These are the best analysts in the world. That's why they're paid the big bucks. That's why they're able to... Have you noticed how they're able to take their rosters and level up after a bad split? Mad Lions just dropped off after the split. And some of that's both factors. It's not just that they did badly. It's also that their edge is getting taken away. And then, by the way, if you ever get any individual drop in form, it's going to look bad. Like, it's going to look dodgy. And by the way, I want to get your thought on the super take. Look, obviously, he's going to be memed forever for stupidly saying he's the best ADC in the world or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
But this was actually another example of why I don't believe in the player, unfortunately, because mate, even when he has like was a flaccid thing, when he has the lead, I don't expect, like, when I watch an LPL game, like, oh fuck, right, watch out, this AD is going to take over the game, you're going to group with him, you're going to win the objective. No, I can't trust him with the lead. I don't know in the mid game if he's going to be able to get the kills, if he's going to be able to secure the fight. I just don't really get, like, maybe you know more about him because you were in the same level of the scene.
Yeah.
Is he really just a super confident guy? Why do you think he made that remark about being the best? Like, that's I don't know. I mean, it's just strange to me.
To me, it sounds like he's just a very confidence-driven player. And he kind of needs to glow himself up and feel that confidence and able to play as confidently in-game. And I think that remark is like, either he's just memeing, which I hope he is, because it's kind of like a wild statement to make when
bonkers,
you play the one split and then be like, I'm the best by far. It's like some fucking Forgiven shit.
It is, yeah.
Like, is he legit just Forgiven back in there? Like, he just took over his soul. But it's like, I think the guy is good. Like, he's definitely good. He's had a good performance for a rookie, like coming into winter. And he's like, I think this guy, how many pentacles has he gotten? But he's like looked really good.
But
at the same time, Mad Lions are only playing for bot most of the games. They're always looking to like set him up. Like, I remember the game when they played versus G2 in the finals, and it was like game three, and he has like Varus is like 7-0, and they were just not able to actually teamfight around him, and they just ended up losing. And he's like 7-0, and his whole team is like, they're just praying for him. Like, it's a fucking Super El Gaib, and they also like all flashing in front of the CC, and they play it perfectly, but he still just dies and gets caught out. And it's like, yes, you can definitely feel that you're like the best AD carry in the league when everyone is kind of playing for you. Now, I do think he's really good, but he's definitely not like the best AD carry right now in the league. I think that's actually Corsi, dude. Or
yeah,
the Koreans that are coming in. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Right, go on then. We'll move on. I agree. We can move past those teams. So let's do Vitality next, obviously. Right, mate, this is another team where, like, I want to tell them within context, like, yeah, not a bad split, you know. You're in these games. You could have gone further. But the reason why that's such a bummer to me, and I want to get your take on this first, is I actually low-key think, now that Hillersang doesn't int, this, I get why this roster was made. I actually, before winter, did hype them. I thought they were going to be like fourth best team in the LEC or something, right? The reason I hyped them was I looked and I was like, mate, I know the Photon guys cracked. Again, I don't follow the Reddit narrative. So when I was watching that Vitality team collapse the year before with Perks and Upset and that, the Photon guy, it was never that he was bad, guys. It's more like he was just, I always thought he just looked like he was in solo queue. He was just really good top lane, but he couldn't connect to the team. And I don't think people played for him, quite frankly. I think he's mega talented. So I think he's a stud still. I don't think he did anything wrong here. You look at the bot lane now sorted, because I agree with you, Kaz, he's cracked, mate. You know what? No one talks in G2 games about Hans Salmon now. Like, he's not really having to be the super carry at this point in time. Caps carries half the game. So I actually think Kazi is fucking really good. And then you go and look at the rest of the team. Vethio's pretty good now. He's even evolved a little bit. The obvious problem, and I want to get your take as a jungler, is this.
There's
another player who's not had much time in Douglas, but it's making it look like, because these other names, we know what they've done in the past, they've been elite players, they played well. So it's making it look like he's either bad or he isn't right for this team. What is your sense for this player?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sense I have too, to be honest. Like, I think Douglas as a player is good. And that's like, but that's it. He's just good. But it doesn't seem like he has his own idea of how to actually play jungle. A lot of the things that he's doing, like even in the series, where they play versus Fnatic, where he's doing like level 3 dive mid, level 3 gank mid. And he could have actually just, if he was adapting in the game, he would easily just look to deny Razorc instead or invade him. But to me, it seems like when I'm watching Vitality play, it's like everyone tells him exactly what he needs to do. Hey, look, you're going to play Volibear, you're going to do 3 camps, and you're going to gank mid. And if you do anything else, you know, and he just seems not the right fit for the team. And I think this is something that I was talking about before as well when I was making a video on Hillersang. And I was showcasing, Hillersang is actually the key player of that team, and he's carrying their like really bad jungle mid synergy and jungle sup synergy. And Hillersang is actually the only one who is actually trying to, you know, salvage that. And I think when I was looking at the team before as well, I knew that they were going to run it down like in the winter season. Because when you play with a player like Hillersang, like, you have to learn how to play with him.
Sure.
Because he's going to play his own way, like, no matter what. Yes. Like, you have to adapt to him. And now when we come into spring, it looks like people are actually getting to know Hillersang. They're like, oh, he goes for this all the time. All right, I guess we just have to follow. But there are like so many situations where Douglas will be like on the other side of the map when they're making a top lane dive play. And Hillersang is like always there in the right position, but his jungler is like one step behind. And one thing I haven't seen like with Douglas and Viteo is like, I haven't seen them many times actually just go through mid, push out the wave, and then just move together. It's always like Hillersang being there and then leading the play and making them go there. And when you watch Douglas play, it just seems like he's being kind of micromanaged by Hillersang or Karzi, and they're just telling him like, hey, yeah, come bot here. No, no, let's go top. And he's just kind of like following into it. But there's nothing to take away from Douglas. I do think he's like a good player overall, but it's just not, that's all he is for now. Just he's a good player, he proved, but that's it. And he was kind of saved by playing Rell like most of his games. It was like he was playing Rell like I don't know how many games, but there's like many until they started banning it for him. But yeah, I think someone like, I think you guys talked about it too, but like if you have Bo on that team, like Bo Hillersang, like I would pay to see that. Like Bo and Hillersang both on the same team, like these two guys, just they could actually be a contender for like being top one or contesting G2, I think. And I think Karzi Hillersang, like this split, they honestly, to me, they look like the best bot lane in Europe right now. And I was so sad when I see them lost. But I kind of expected it because I just think like them having such a poor mid jungle synergy and sup jungle synergy is just going to hurt them in the long run. Like the better teams you play versus, it's going to be like much more of a weakness.
This is where I've got a theory for you. And I want to see what you think as someone who played the pro level and has obviously been around the scene and even most recently played last year. It goes like this. I actually think one of the interesting things from watching LEC all these years is you've seen the evolution of how people general manage teams. So in the early days, it basically players made the teams and they just got the player that they think's really good. And back then, actually, you didn't need as much cohesion. There wasn't as many set players. There wasn't like setups for objectives in the same way. You sort of just play off skill and you play a little bit. It's actually Swedish way that you play Counter-Strike. You play a bit loosey. goosey and just let the stars do what the stars do. And if you have Xbeki and Suarez, they basically win the game for you and do all the genius moves and you just do whatever, right? As we've evolved and we've gotten teams that can play together and could team fight and then they could side lane and they could do the objective control, I feel like in the modern day, the area I think GMs lack, because I agree with you, by the way, almost none of the players we're talking about are like, should just be out of LEC. It's not like, right, you just can't play this level. You're fired, out, leave. They could all, in theory, be on a team. And some of them, by the way, could even be on much better teams. All their teams would be much better if they swapped. And sometimes, this is the key point, you could even swap. Sometimes, I actually think you could even swap some weaker players if they fit what you need onto a team and make some of the squads we're talking about better. So that's the evolution, I think, in general managers is this. Because we have these coaches that are in this position now, people like Peter Dunn, people like Mac, and the reputation is they're genius. They'll find talent and then they'll mold them, right? We've got to stop that mold thing, as in you can tweak a player. You can help him like, hey, like let's like limit a bit of this here and then like we're going to use this. You can't take a player though, for example, this is like that conversation about the Flakhead one. You can't take Flakhead and go, Flakhead, you know what, mate? You're actually upset. The whole game's going to go for you from now on. You're on hyper carries and we're just going to peel and in team fights, you're going to fucking pentakill them. Like that's not molding. That's telling him like, become a different person. Like, he can't do that. And that'd be insane to think a coach would have. There's no time for that. You don't do it. You figure out drafts and scrims and tell them things from Korean games and stuff. Yeah. That's not even the job. So I think the area we made a mistake is this. I think these GMs are picking players that I can see they've got qualities, but I think the level up needs to be this. You need to look, who are my best players? Because the stars, the good thing about LEC is they're very set. We know how they play. We know what they're the best at. We know. Look at your stars and don't say, is this the best jungler I can recruit now? This is what you say. Is this the right jungler for Vethio? Is this the right jungler to play with Hillersang? If you're on another team, Heretics, is this the player that's going to mean that then when Wonder weak sides, it's we're winning the game because he can't be put behind, he doesn't need the resources. Is this the ADC that's going? No, I think you need to ask what you needed, not how good the player is, and not like this thing of like, well, I'll work with him. Hey, like, because think about how much time you'll be wasting telling like a jungler, for example, who doesn't have like a shot call and mindset and wants to be told what to do. Oh no, you need to take agency and initiative. Like you can add so many extra. I feel like that's like the hardest route. That's like, that's trying to swim up the stream and go up the waterfall. You want to find a way to go with the current, you know what I mean? With what already is working and flow that. What's your take?
No, absolutely. I think just a lot of the rosters that's been put together are just not fitting for each other in that case. Because I think you could take a player like Flakhead and then replace him with Upset. And then Heretics might actually look really good because they need someone to actually lead and they get the firepower that they need, right? But then at the same time, a lot of these like rosters, how they're being made is a lot of times it's very random because it's like, oh, this guy was available. Let's just put him in here. He's the best that we have right now. Let's get him out there. And it just either it's, I don't know if it's the coaches making it. I know that it's the GMs making the decisions most of the time. Because a lot of times when I hear other players, they're like, oh, we like when Trimby got replaced out of Fnatic, they were like, oh, we had no idea.
Oh, they all shocked,
They're like, oh, okay. I mean, we had a pretty good season and we made it Worlds. And it's just like, they're just making these decisions for them. And same with when Perks got replaced.
Yep.
And they're just kind of like, oh, our scrims were actually doing pretty good.
Yeah, that's what they said.
But it's like, that's the problem with the rosters that are all being built. There's no like actual cohesive thought behind, will they actually fit together? It's more about like what's available and he was good on paper, let's throw him in here. Because I just think there's so many rosters that could actually be good in the LEC if we actually get the players that they need together, like but I think there's that's what's been hurting us for like the past years, because I think there are many good players out there but they're just not in the right environment. And that's also a skill of a coach, like being able to understand what your players need. Like, you, if you have Upset, I would put, like, more dogs around him that would actually follow him and play around bot. Like, I wouldn't put, like, a super carry on top and then a super carry jungler. Like, super carry jungler and Upset, like, if you know what kind of player Upset is, since I played with
him as well. He wants the dog jungler, doesn't he?
He wants the dog jungler, and he's very, like, when he has the dog jungler and people just do what he says, then he's really good, right? Like, everyone plays towards him. Like, you have a Niski in there. Okay, he's always reusing his prior, and he's roaming bot. He's helping out Upset. Upset becomes the carry.
Yes.
And that's, like, perfect. And then you also need people who are willing to go in with Upset. Like, you had Hillersang Upset when they were together. They look great together. But that's the thing. It's very sad to see that there's not many rosters that are well thought when they put them together.
Yes.
In order to like complement each other, because that's how a roster is supposed to be. It's like, okay, we have this carry top laner. Let's make sure we get a good jungler that they can skirmish around top side. And then we get like a weak side bot lane. because we have a strong top side, but you don't do like a very strong jungler, a strong bot lane, and a strong top lane. It's like, okay, who are we playing around, guys? And then everyone's also gonna, because when I was mentioning to you about the like heretics, when you were talking about like, oh, let's get in. Wait, who was it? The player you said another shot caller.
Crowny.
Oh, Crowny. Yeah, Crowny. You said right, and it's like, yeah, Crowny is a really good player, but probably not in that team because Crowny is a very demanding player as well in his shot calls, and they already have enough voices, so it just becomes like a very chaotic, and the team doesn't have like a clear playstyle, and that's why I also think Mad Lions worked really well. It was really simple. Elioia, you do the shot calling, and we're gonna play whatever you say. She's like, I want to play bot side, and they play bot side, and it's like there's no disagreement there, and that was a very well put together roster, honestly. So yeah, I think a big part about the team being successful is about having players complement each other's strengths and weaknesses in order to actually become good.
Yeah, two quick things. I've definitely referenced these on past episodes, but I'll reiterate. One of the reasons why I bristle a little bit, like the LEC is trash angle, is because I agree if you just look at the, especially if you watch LCK and LPL guys, they're just not as clean. They can't pull off some of the players. They can't accelerate like top lane carries like they can in those regions. There's certain things you just can't do, right? But my problem is this. I guess what I bristle at is I think the implication, because a lot of it's NA and LCS fans getting their chance to get back at us and be like, ah, you're trash too. It's like, here's why you're trash in a way we aren't though, guys. You couldn't mix all your rosters up and make like four amazing rosters that would beat us. The difference is literally the LEC right now, I actually think the player talent is very good. I just think that they're like, it's not, they're just mismatched. Like I say, it's like someone took the names and just put them in a hat and drew them up. You just get these five players. No, I've got like three players that work together and two that don't. Like there's a classic thing in League that used to be the shot calling concept. It's the same for teams. It's the idea that like, it's better to have five players follow a bad plan than five players do their own version of a good plan. And that, I think that applies to rosters. Like you can have five good players, but I even think sometimes teams like Fnatic do this. You can have five good players, but if they don't have the same synergy, if they don't have the same idea of the game, and especially if they don't have like for example, a way to communicate their idea of the game if they're just playing separately. Like I always say about, I'll go back on that one. I want to get your take on the Photon guy, mate, because I have to say, I don't think I'm like an expert about the strategy of the game. I'm not even that good in the draft. I don't play it at the high level. I've never tried that angle. But I do think I'm good at low and player performance because I've watched a lot of matches of League of Legends in my life. And I have to say, mate, the whole time I've seen this Photon guy play, I don't think he's good, mate. I think he's really fucking good. Like I actually think for real, if it doesn't work out in LEC, I think he could go back to LCK and be an LCK, mate. I think they might even take him on a good team. Like, he actually looks like he has real talent. Because I'm thinking to myself, he has to be speaking second language English. He's on a team with, like, a weird environment. I guarantee he's never been in an environment before, by the way, where you have people, like, flaming each other and shit like that. Like, that ain't the Korean way. You know, so considering all that, like, to me, he's somewhat held back in a way. I'm sure he does some of it himself. Like I say, I don't know if I do feel like sometimes he's not on the comms channel when he gets those leads in top lane. Yeah. Like, it feels like he can't say, you know, group around me now or whatever. But what do you think? This guy looks talented to me, mate.
I mean, I think he's extremely good and one of the like key reasons why Vitality was even doing as good as they were doing. Because he was the only guy like consistently always getting ahead in his matchup. He plays on, you know, the meme of like Korean Jace.
Yep.
But when he plays Jace, it looks fucking broken. Like, it actually looks good.
Yes.
But the thing is, the vibe I get when I watch them like play, I think they made an attempt to like play for Photon and like play topside. But it went so bad in scrims that they were like, okay, fuck it. Just leave Photon on his island, let him do his job and let him do well. And that's why we see kind of the Photon that we see today. It's like, he will do really good and he will like do what he has to and try to carry, but they're not going to like fully play towards topside. Like, it's going to be around Karzai, Hillsong, because they know exactly how to actually snowball a lead and they can actually like direct the game in a way where they don't actually need to play around Photon. But I think he's really good and he could definitely be like in a playoffs team in LCK. And I even thought he was like good last year as well, even though like they had a complete disaster split. But I really like him. I think he's super good, honestly.
No, I'll even give you an example of like a swap just to show what I mean by like, I think he's in the wrong team too. I'll tell you a swap I would do immediately. You can disagree if you want. If I was Heretics and I was Vitality, mate, just swap Wunder for Photon. Haven't we just sort of fixed both of our teams? Like, think of the fucking... Now you can play through topside if you're the guys... Flackhead's going to play that weak side. Why would you have Karzai if you're going to have a carry top laner? You know what I mean? Like, I agree with you, by the way. Karzai probably the best ADC in the West right now. He's fucking sick. And if you actually load him up resources... I've always said this. What changed my mind on Karzai? It's not just that... He wasn't, like, secretly always amazing and I was just a hater. It's that the game did change. In the same way as why Reckless doesn't make sense as an ADC and as a result doesn't even play ADC anymore. That's why now Karzai does make sense as an ADC. He knows yours, actually, that like LPL style of how you play ADC, where it isn't like you wait on the edge of the 5v5 team fight, like you kite back on the fucking tank that's coming in on you, and then you just get like a pentakill by last click, right click, and all the chat. That's not League of Legends for years now, guys. It really is now. Like, you go in and you have to basically just push it to the fucking limit. You have to redline the car like this. And you're almost going off the track, and then you're just hoping all your teammates peel, do all the shit, keep the CC off, you're going to flash, dodge, everything. The million spell rotations are coming in. Kha'Zix thrives like that, though, right? It's why when Hillersang actually doesn't int, bro, they're fucking awesome together, because Hillersang's going in too. Kha'Zix clearly wants you to go in with him when he goes in like that.
Yeah, yeah. I have to disagree on like the Photon and Wonder Change. But the reason I disagree on it is because Photon is one of the like the extra win condition resources that they have in Vitality. So a lot of games, like you're saying, like Hydlesang will run it down, or Karza will have those like 0-14 bot lane, you know? And the only reason they're able to even contest in those games is because Photon is doing so well. So if they remove that Photon guy, they put Wonder there, and now Hillersang and Karza int, and now it's like, Viteo, could you carry, please? You know? But now they have like Photon, who's like, okay, we all inted, but guys, our top lane is really strong. We can still play around them.
Right.
So I think Photon like really fits the team in the sense that even if Karza, Hillersang will int, like they will still have that guy. Like that guy can still make a difference in the game, and he's going to do really well on his counter picks as well. So yeah, that's why.
Fair enough. Also, by the way, I do think people, I agree with you, people went to, they do this every time with Hillersang. He has had, like in winter, and then obviously last year, 2 years ago when he was in Fnatic, he has had certain splits where he just mega ran it down. Like he just, because his problem is he has no brakes. He'll, like, even when the car's going off the cliff, his logic is like, well, if I drive faster, maybe I can jump over the cliff. And it's like, no, now you just go even faster off the cliff, you know? But the problem is this, when he turns it around, because part of his impulse to go for those moves is so unique and is genius, he obviously can be a mega win condition. So I think most people think he just wasn't shit. Like, as the split went on, actually, he is one of the reasons why actually this team could do something, why they could contest the best teams. Like, as you say, especially with the Daglas component, imagine if instead you'd had like a really conservative support there. I think the Daglas guy would be completely on an island and they just wouldn't even be in these games, because the Hillersang angle will always give you, like, as much as he can feed, he can also find a crazy pick. I can start a fight that you never could engage otherwise.
Yeah, that one as well. Like, he's the one that's actually always starting a fight because he is playing so aggressive. He is walking up in enemy team's face. He's forcing a fight when they are strong. And yes, he had a terrible season, like in winter, right? But Hillersang, if you know him as a player, we've watched him long enough to understand that, like, he will have those grief seasons where he will just run it the fuck down, and there will be no mercy on his team and the enemy team. But then when he actually gets into that form where he gets used to his own team, his team gets used to him and how he plays, then they look like a contender. Like, they look really good. And I think Hillersang is, like, if they had, like, more a conservative support, like you say, I think they would just be farming until waiting to lose. And that's what would happen when they are ahead. They'd be like, okay, let's take it down. Let's wait for them to come into us. Now, Hillersang is like, we're strong. I'm going to face check everything and I'm going to walk in, follow me, or lose the game. It's like, okay, we follow. Hillersang says, and we follow. And that's it. And he's the one who's able to like make the team snowball as fast as they do because of how Hillersang plays. But yeah, of course, I'm not going to defend him and be his lawyer and say, like, he's playing always good. No, he is a griefer at times, and that is true. But when he's in form, like him and Karza, they look fucking great together.
Yes.
Like, they can play anything in bot lane as well, and they win most of the matchups on bot lane. Like, even in the first game that they played versus, I think it was the second game versus Fnatic, like, they were stomping bot, and then they were gonna, then they botched the dive, and now they're behind it, right? But it's in the first place that it's even possible to die bot. And I love Hillersang. I'm a big fan of him. I think he's one of the like few supports that's actually trying to reinvent the support role and show how useless it is to die. And that's what you should do as a support. You should be starting fights and get your team when they are strong. You should be starting any fight and making sure that you can snowball. And that's what he really excels at.
It's the other reason why when he has the mega bad split, even though when you're watching week to week to week, it feels like he's just done. He's just washed. Get rid of him. The reason why it is so hard to actually kick him is because if you kick him and he goes to another team and then he has the bounce back and it switches to the engagement, you are going to feel so fucking stupid. It's a bit like, you remember the story, guys, when everyone decided Mickey X isn't that good in G2 anymore, is he? Then he went to XL, the team that everyone knew was never, ever a threat. And they were like winning most. They were like second in the league. League or something crazy. He was like an MVP candidate. And everyone, and even G2 were like, fuck, get him back. Get him back immediately. Like with a player like that, when the upside is that crazy, unfortunately, you do have to balance that against the downside. You can, this isn't like if a rookie came in and hinted like that, I'd go, well, look, I don't know that you can do anything better. So yeah, replace him, get someone else. I agree. I think with Hillesang, you just have to, it's sweet and sour. Sometimes it's sweet, sometimes it's sour. By the way, the cool thing about it as well is I agree with you. I guess you're right. I can't play as cynically as I would, where it's like I have the weak side top lane all the time and I just go through bot lane. Because even in the games Hillesang is winning, he does an isky. He'll just throw you. He'll give you a chance. It's like he's an Englishman.
He's a nice guy.
He'll give you a sporting chance. You know what? I'm winning too much. I think what, you have a free shot. Go on. And sometimes you get knocked out when that happens in the Hillesang game, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, but that's why I love to watch him play. Gosh. I'm really sad that they actually lost. I think I would have liked to see them at MSI and just see their like chaotic.
After seeing the way this whole series went, mate, I have to say the obvious team for me is I wanted it to be G2 and Vitality. I'm with you. At least there was like some aspect. I mean, by the way, even just like I would vote on Villain, the MSI would be interesting. I think you go head to head with some of those tops. Kazi's really good. Like, I think you've got players there. The problem with the other teams is, like, Heretics, I definitely didn't want to go. BDS, I'm so scared they're going to go because I think they're going to get absolutely murked. Like, I think that'll be embarrassing. And then the Fnatic one, let's talk a bit about Fnatic then. There's a very good chance Fnatic can go because here's the thing Fnatic has. The one thing you cannot say about this team is they lack firepower. That's probably the best quality is firepower, right? And their players, this is what's weird. I'm not a pro, so I could be off on this, but I cynically think when I watch this team, I actually do think the coaching staff's done a really good job with the players that they have. Like, remember, they only changed one player in the offseason, guys. And it's not like the team that went to Worlds was contending. They weren't. Like, they could have come top eight, but they would have got marked immediately by anyone. All those Asian teams were a level above. So when I look at it, you haven't even given them more pieces. What the hard thing about this team is, I feel like it's another team that has synergy issues because I feel like almost everyone individually can be good. I'm not that big a Jun fan, but I think the others, like Noah definitely has skills. Sometimes he looks a bit hesitant to me or doesn't know what he's doing. Everyone knows the humanoid Razorc thing. It's not that it doesn't work. Like they both have games where they kill everything. It's just they don't look like the people where like, I put it this way, I wonder if these people play duo because they don't look like the ones where it's like they're on the same, you know, we have the same game plan. Like, I'm going to tell you what wave I'm probably going to set up so you can come. I don't think they do that. They feel like they just play. They play on instinct almost. What do you think of this Fnatic squad?
Yeah, okay. So, first of all, I need to talk about like Fnatic's game ones. Like, their game ones look always horrendous, like from draft perspective and in gameplay. And I think like that first came down to like the Team Heretics one is the most famous one where there were like so many mistakes where everyone was just saying, that's when everyone was like railing on EU saying it's total trash, etc.
Yes.
But like to me, it looks like Fnatic have that sleep schedule where you're waking up at like 15:30, like 1.5 hours before the game. And you're like,
she's groggy.
I have to take the shuttle. Right. Sure. It's outside. We need to go now. Yes. And then they go and they play that first game and they're like, oh shit. And then they just fucking grief it, you know? Because in that first game, like the mistakes they make, I feel like Fnatic does have the firepower. They're really good, like individually. Yes. But they kind of lack the brain in the sense of like how to actually snowball a lead. Because even in the first game that we watched, like versus Team Heretics, like, okay, despite them just running it down, and then they're randomly going to go and contest the Herald, even though they are behind the tempo, they don't, like, they can just give the Herald and be like, okay, with the game. And it's still a fine game state. And that's the thing, like, okay, they lost first game. It was horrendous. But people make it out like, oh, Fnatic, they stomped the next two games and then they just took over Team Heretics. Like, no, did you watch that second game? Like, Fnatic were 5k up, they take a fight around Dragon, Jun is looking for a flank on the Aatrox, flashes to W, the Aatrox in, dies, when it's like so simple, they just have to be grouped in the river, let Jun look for a flank, and just play front to back, you're 5k up. But they're just lacking that like simple way of winning a game. And then afterwards that fight, they lose it, they just sprint to Nash and do a 50-50, Jankos is in the pit, the Nash gets smited at 500, and then even then, they all die, they lose three members after the Nasher. And then Team Heretics run into them and Noah gets a quadra kill. It's like, guys, it wasn't like Fnatic were stomping the second game. No, it was really close for no reason. And that's my problem with Fnatic when I see them play. It's like they have so many easy games where they can just snowball properly and they don't need to make any mistakes. Like, it's so simple. And even in the like Vitality series, if we jump forward, it's like Noah is like 2-0 on the Zaya. And then they're like, okay, we dove bot and Noah is ahead right now. Okay, let's go topside. And then Noah gets dove on bot and he's like, what?
Yes.
And then later on, it's like, Noah is on 5-0 and he's on mid lane. And he's like, on mid? They're like, let's die bot. It's like they're trying to make it as hard as possible to win the game. And they see enemy and they fight. And that's pretty much it.
Let me ask you a question.
Like 17 kills.
I've got a question. One thing I've always tried to do is when I know pro players, this is one thing that's funny that everyone always tells me I know nothing. Yeah, the difference is in Counter-Strike, I'll tell you this, mate, I've watched every great game of Counter-Strike ever for 20 plus years and I knew every player. So I actually think, no joke, I think I know better than the pros sometimes. Now, I never say I know what they know. I know other things. I have a different perspective, maybe a bigger picture. But sometimes I will disagree. In league, I don't do that. What people don't know to this day is I go to some of the greatest players of all time, especially if they're still active in the other teams. And I ask them, like, what do you think of this theory on this? And if they shoot it down, they have good points. They'll go, ah, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I need to rework that or whatever. And sometimes if they make a really great point or give me an insight, I'll use it on a show and I'll test it out. Like, does this make sense? So one concept I was taught years ago by some, because I've known some of the best shot callers' minds ever in European league. And they taught me some of the concepts, like when you split the map as a jungler, like when you shouldn't just like opt into an objective fight where you're behind and you can't win in the straight up 5v5. They taught me the basic principles you should apply as a team, right? And one thing they always told me is literally the solo queue principle as a jungler applies to this day, which is, you know, in solo queue, the problem is, let's say you're going bot lane because you're going to get a good 3v2 and you've pathed correctly and the other jungler isn't there. And that's just the best angle to go and get a kill. And you've got two other people to help you get the kill. There's a reason why bot lane became more ganked in Europe, guys, than top lane. Like what happens then classically is when your top laner gets ganked, maybe it's like a cross map player or he just gets ganked anyway, he doesn't look where the ward is. When he's down 0-2, he obviously then, he like perma pings you, doesn't he? Come top. Because what he wants you to do is save him and save his lane, right? And the problem is, in a solo queue game, people don't understand there's a concept, it's the same concept in medicine, it's called triage. It's where if a bunch of patients come in, you don't just start dealing with the kid who's cut his finger on a piece of paper, you deal with the guy who's died of a heart attack. You're going, right, that's way more important, I've got to put you to the one side. Yeah. And in fact, if I actually only have a certain amount of time, I'm never going to get to you, kid, with a paper cut. I'm sorry, I've got to deal with these guys like dying of like lungs, fucking, you know, bleeding out. And so basically, I was told a jungler, a good jungler, always has that in mind. And basically, if he does have lanes that are ahead and one is behind and is going more behind, nearly always, unless it's some like weird scaling comp, you have to do the opposite. You have to go, sorry, you're fucked. Actually, your job, by the way, top laner in this analogy, is just die a bit less, but you're going to be on your own, mate. I have to get that. If I've got bot lane 2-0 up, I've got to make them 4-0 up. You know, I've got to get them out of lane ahead. What would you say to this concept? Because I feel like it's another one of those ones where I know it's easy when you're not in the game to say, but the amount of pro teams that do what you say, they do like a democracy. It's like, right, you've had your get, you're ahead now. Right, let's go fix it. It's like, why? Whoa, yeah. Dude, in the LPL, they wouldn't do that. They would just go, like I say, if they have the Jace carry top laner, that Jace is going to either end the game like 7-9 or he's going to be like 12-2. You know what I mean? Like they're going to fucking push that lead. Give me your thoughts. You were a jungler for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, as a jungler, I got baited so many times in my entire pro league career where top laner would be like 0-2, but like, can you look top? And I have like a 4-0 bot lane and I'm like giving in not to it. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's look. And then we both get killed. But it's like, you have to understand, like, this is their strong side of the map. Like, this is the only play you can make where you have a losing chance. If you take a 3v3 on bot lane or 4v4, you will 90% win it because of how strong ahead your AD carry is. So it more becomes like top side versus bot side. But the way Fnatic plays, it looks like they want the whole map to be doing well. You know, everyone is doing good. Like, no matter what, okay, Noah is ahead, we can leave him. And that's the kind of mindset they have instead. Instead of like, Noah is ahead, let's make sure we take every fight with him and let's make sure we continue snowballing because our chances of winning every fight just goes up higher. It's just a mathematical equation where it just makes more sense to play around the strong player and continue snowballing. And that's why also like a lot of people are hating on the LEC because they can't even execute this like basic thing where like playing around your strongest member. And we saw it even like in the Giants X. I don't want to talk about it, but like, you know, when Patrick is like 5-0, but they're still playing on the other side. It's like, guys, it's so simple. Like, it's just 1+1. It's 2. It's not like, it's so simple. Just go play with him. And I mean, that's my issue with Fnatic, because I feel like they're always going to give the opponents a chance to play the game, even though there shouldn't be any chance. And another like situation I just want to talk about is like also how de-synergized they are sometimes. Like Razork will look for a fight on bot, then Humanoid TP's top to shut down the Jace with his Rek'Sai top when Noah is already like really strong. It's just like, what are we actually doing? It looks like they're trying to play the entire map instead of just keeping it simple.
Yes, and, go on. I would also go on, finish up.
Okay, so what I want to say, like, I don't think it's wrong to also take the fight when you are strong. Like, I don't want to be like the LCK back in like 2017. It's like,
too conservative,
we only take the 100%
play.
True. No, true. You should still play like aggressive. You can win the fight.
Yes.
But if you have the option to just simply win the game and snowball it properly, then just take the option. Like, don't complicate the game. And yeah, that's all I want to say.
I would say as well is the clue is in the analogy I gave guys of the medicine doctor, right? What essentially his job there is, it's two parts. And this is the second part's what people miss, mate. He's not only identifying who he does need to deal with, he's saying no to the other person. And that's what I don't think happens, bro. That's why I actually hate, I won't do a whole political thing, but in teams, in league, I hate democracy, mate. Because democracy is like everyone gets an equal vote. Well, obviously the guy top lane isn't going to go, I vote, you fuck my lane and let me look shit and everyone already hate me. He's going to be like, save me, help me. So in this analogy, I have to say, that's why if I look at Fnatic, one major concern I have, I actually think this might be the whole problem with their team. It's why I actually think that Trimby kick was kind of silly, mate. I think they lack shot calling. I think they don't have the person to say no. I think if people don't know, like, Humanoid supposedly has a really good mind for the game and knows what he wants to do. But I've heard he's not the guy who's just talking all the time, like, permanently telling everyone where to... And Razork, look, Razork knows how to play to the limits and his skill level is fucking amazing. And he does play like he's a demon, but he clearly doesn't know when to stop and he doesn't know when to not do that dive and doesn't know when to, like, pull back and play creative. And as we're saying, for the teamfight objectives... Like you said, this team doesn't know you can give up a fucking objective. They think you fight all the time, like a bad LPL team. You know what I mean? Like, you just go to the fight and opt into another fight. You go to the... They, essentially, if they were boxers, all they'd do is just stand in front of the other guy with no hands up, just fucking punching like this and hope they knock him out while they're taking a load of blows themselves. It's like, listen, if you got the skill they have, you'll win sometimes. But notice how they're barely winning these series, guys. That's why I'm scared if they... Even if they go to MSI, I'm scared. Because I feel like... You put them against any of the LPL teams, it's going to be so dangerous. They're going to get murdered. They're going to get absolutely murdered.
Yeah. No, okay, I have to first say that I really love your analogies. I think that's one of your key skills. Like, you have really good analogies, which are pretty fucking funny. But yeah, that's the thing. I think a lot of teams struggle with this, where they have, like, too much Mr. Nice Guy. And what a Mr. Nice Guy is basically... You know, you say like, oh, you want to go here? Maybe we can fight. And then everyone's like, yeah, sure. Because Razork, to me, like, when you listen to his comms and stuff, he's like very impulsive player. He's like, he sees moments. And he's like, oh, maybe we can fight here, guys. And everyone's like, yeah, sure. I mean, you look at that team, like, who's going to say no? Oscarini, like, that guy's playing top lane. Like, he has nothing to do there. And like you said, Humanoid is like really skilled, but he's not like the kind of guy that like talks. I'm sure he will say no. And he's the only guy saying no sometimes. But like the Koreans are also not going to be the ones who are like overruling Razork when Razork is like, no, no, look, we can look at this. And then everyone's just like, oh, yeah, well, okay. And everyone just says, okay. But that's why you need that toxic piece of shit, like sometimes in the teams, who is like, no, you guys are fucking griefing. We're not doing this. Just stop it, you know? And they like calm them back down. And if they can get that kind of guy, I think their games will look like so much better because they definitely have the skill to execute every single like team fight and stuff because they are very mechanically skilled, like the whole team. Yes. It's just they lack that discipline of just knowing which fights to actually take and then just okay, you know what, we are like a bit behind, let's not give up two turrets for this second rake. And that's like the biggest weakness that I see with Fnatic.
That's why I give
I was just gonna say, like, to lead on, like, if they are gonna play versus a team like BDS or I guess G2, who are more composed in the fights that they take, because the first time Fnatic played versus G2, they just got dismantled. It was like G2 didn't run into them and start inting. No, they took the fights that they want to take. They took the fights that they chose. And Fnatic took the fights that they wasn't supposed to be able to take. And they didn't give them any opportunities to just roll back the game like Vitality does. And I just think they're going to get like rolled over. But any team versus G2 is going to get rolled over, honestly.
Yeah, this is why I gave the example, because obviously they chose to remove this guy, by the way, late in the offseason, apparently. That's why I said I would have kept Trimby, because as far as I know, he is a guy who's trying to call things, etc., and make calls. And in fact, it was implied in past teams, because obviously he's good, that maybe like they thought they did that too much in past teams or whatever. In this team, it might work, mate, because the other angle would be, this is where, funnily enough, people get a bad rep as a player, but if you know what they're doing, it works. Well, when people like Crowney and Upset, you might think, they get kicked out, how can they be good? It's the opposite. They're really good. Their problem is, though, they demand you only play their way. Like, they're like, everyone do what? Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though. If on the right team, that's fucking amazing. Like, you actually want... the joke is, I've even had people like Upset know this is the rep. And so now, sometimes, when they're even in losing teams, they're sort of, well, I'll do that less because I don't want it to be that I was, like, the tyrant. In a way, mate, that's the best thing. If you were just like, listen, fuck this. We don't know what we're doing. Group around me now. I've got 2 kills in the second item. And look, just do it. If we group now at this fight or we don't take this fight, that's where that guy actually being self office sometimes can help you. The problem is then they do it for their style. So I'd rather it came from support if possible. I don't know why they did this young move. It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird pickup for me. I'm not sure what it was. So I still think the saddest thing is if you could put a shot caller in this team, mate, you clean up even a little bit of those lost games, this team would easily be the second best team. It'd be like them and G2 would be on the mountaintop and everyone else would be reaching up, doing nothing. Because I'm with you. If we now talk about BDS, this is why, if I actually get this right, by the way, I want everyone to actually give me, because I get so many things wrong in league shows. I've got to get fucking credit for this one. If BDS beats Fnatic, guys, you have to give me credit. Here's why. Because I actually think last split was a masterclass of coaching from BDS. Like the way they were able to pivot from Crowny hyper carry, play through bot all the time, to Adam top lane is who we play through. He even was playing some meta champions and then he worked in the ice guy. So he didn't even have the pressure on that split. Now you've had to go back. This is what's mad. Yeah. This split, guys, they're going back to the opposite. It isn't Crown Shot there, though. The Ice Guy's having some pretty good games. Adam's actually having some bad games in Inton and showing some issues with his champion pool, potentially attitude-wise. Nuke and Sheo have never been the same players they were last year. Like, the lineup isn't even that good. Labrov's pretty good, but he was, you know, he can't be on a hook champion every game. They're not actually even as good as they were in winter, but the joke is they might actually be in finals. Like, because the key thing, I think, is what we were just mentioning. It's the composure. Like, this team somehow does know that they don't have to take fights. And when they're playing like a Fnatic or one of these teams that like to play a bit crazy, this is a sign of great coaching, by the way, guys. It's so hard to get like five players who think this way. They actually do let you into them. Bro, there are so few teams in the West actually can do that. So if that is the Korean style, if people don't know. That's what makes Koreans so difficult to play against. You think, well, just go for moves. That's exactly what they want. They're waiting. They're about to fuck you up when you go in as the jungler on your own like that. Like, you're going to find out like they saved an ult, like the fucking flashback out, and then you're just in the middle of nowhere. Like, that aspect of the team, they haven't got much else going for them. They're having a lot of trouble with a lot of other aspects. Even the draft, you saw some of the shit against G2. But that one component, mate, that will win you a lot of League of Legends games. If you can get to an objective and then just basically set up, not go two balls deep yourself, let the other person do the mistake and punish the mistake, that fundamentally wins games. Like, this seems like actually, like, I don't like the team at the moment, but I've got to give them props for how they're playing.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think BDS is probably the most composed team when we look at all the other teams, right? We look at like Vitality, we look at the Fnatic, like they are really crazy. But one of the reasons I think BDS will actually win versus Fnatic is just the composure that they have. They are going to choose the team fights that they do want to play. And they're not going to just run into Fnatic and get dragged into this like shit fest where everyone is just contesting everything and just continuing to, it's just going to be complete chaos. But yeah, I think like BDS definitely had the worst split overall like this year. And ever since like the whole Adam incident, it doesn't look like
the team
has fully recovered.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's really funny to me because it's like they replace Crownshot for the reason of like, we want to play topside. We don't want to play around ice. And then that's the thing about like League of Legends pro play. It's always like, it doesn't matter what you think. Like, we can just change the entire patch in 1 week and then you have to play like this way. And then like Jinx, Zeri comes
it's
in.
All
it's, like,
same,
okay,
it's all the same.
Sides.
Champions for Crownshot, isn't it?
It's literally it's like champions. So funny because all the champions that Crownshot would play is actually the ones that Ice is playing. But I have to say, like, Ice is performing really well.
Yeah.
Like, at least in the past series, like Globe. He was almost able to carry some games like versus G2, despite them having like horrendous macro. But it's like Ice is probably one of the like the key players in their team right now. So he is like the guy that they're playing for again. And Adam is like the one that they're not playing for anymore. And they're just leaving him on this island and like, kind of like hoping that he will carry the game or like hoping that he will do well in his lane. But everything, all eyes are on Ice. And I think he's delivering, honestly. It's like, yeah, that's why I think BDS will probably make the finals.
Here's my question for you again, jungle question, which is I have found Chio one of the hardest players to evaluate the whole time he's been in LEC. Because I do think if you ever look, I always say this, like the term in English is like a bellwether. It's like a thing that shows like what's coming, basically. I've always said, I think people over tunnel, obviously because of my beef with them as well, people tunnel too much individually on Nuke, like it's a 1v1 game. Like I've never seen him as some like god mid laner. He has like above average skills. He's like an all right player. He can at times be like maybe the third or fourth best mid, but he's never like the crazy, he'll never take over the game like Caps. In fact, you even look at his champion pool, you can tell when he's not in his game because they restrict it. They bring it down to like two or three champions and they just build all drafts out of those two or three champions and they never put him on ones he's uncomfortable on. Because by the way, the odd times he gets on an uncomfortable champion, it can look really fucking bad. Like he can really have bad games. So for me, I've always thought Shio's form is what I'm looking for. When Shio's form's up, that's when I feel like Nuke comes up with him and they're able to do stuff. how do you evaluate this Shio player? Because I feel like no one ever says he's one of the best junglers, but he's been on teams that have been near the top. And like I say, he seems to have some up and down. Who is he as a jungler to you?
I mean, to me, he's a very creative jungler. At least like last year was when I was the most surprised, even like back in LFL playing versus him. I think he's like, they used to do all these like level one invades. Like, I don't know if you remember, but there was like this infamous where he played Wukong. He jumps over the wall and stands behind the enemy, like when they start red buff, and then he just steals it. You know, like he has that kind of creativity, but it kind of got like toned down more towards this year. And you haven't seen that kind of Shio, like, again, I haven't seen those level one strategies or anything like this. I feel like Shio's job right now as a jungler is more to be like the savior of the team. So like a lot of times when Adam like maybe messes up his lane or something, the Shio will drop all these camps and he will go top and for a creative ganks. Like he has very creative pathings and he will find opportunities that most junglers are not going to find. Like most junglers just want to finish their full clear, but he's going to do like two camps even. And then he's just going to run into mid and then look for a gank because he knows it's going to be helpful for Nuke. And when he's doing these kind of things, then he's kind of like salvaging every single lane. And I think Shio has been like, he hasn't really been able to play his own game.
He's got a hard job, hasn't he? Like,
getting ran around and having to help laners, and he prioritized that, and that's why he's like so essential for BDS as well. So for me, he's not a superstar jungler in the terms that he will like play Graves and fucking get like 200 CS up and be like Milky Way in his 1v9. No, he's more like the salvager of the team, and he will like, he will give up himself to help the team get ahead, and sometimes he can backfire and he chaos fall behind and be completely useless, but most of the times he's actually doing the right things in game. And I think it comes from having a good coaching staff as well, and just having a set way of playing the game that BDS all understand.
This is where, though, I have to give Adam a bit of flame. Not only has he just not looked as good. I mean, I'll even say this. The reason why I think his form isn't that good, even on his champion, sometimes he's not actually winning. Like, they used to be almost auto wins when he locked those in. He always would have the edge. By the way, guys, Adam, thank you. You know what, your service, you have done an admirable service for EU. You've taught everyone how to play against Olaf and fucking Darius and Garen, mate. That's why Garen isn't even a champion anymore. Like, thank you. Before that, we would have gotten fucked up if like Gam or someone had come with some crazy top lane. We never will now, because you've trained everyone in scrims and official games what to do. Finally, guess what? That Olaf doesn't just run over the whole team fight. It's not impossible to kill. Nowadays, people don't let you kill them 1v1. They didn't know the kill threat before because they weren't specialists in these weird matchups. That seems to have gone, especially when his individual form's down a bit. And my biggest problem is this. If you are Shio, Adam is now your biggest nightmare. Because this guy, I don't know if you remember, there's a classic GIF everyone's seen on the internet, I think, right? It's one where there's a guy and he's helping this baby deer, you know, the animal, a deer that comes in the forest. Yeah. He's helping this baby deer out of a swimming pool. You might have seen this one. And the second he gets it out, because it's a deer and it's just like an animal, the second he gets it out, it just runs and then it fucking falls back in the pool and you're like, oh, bloody hell. That's what Adam is sometimes like. If I'm Shio in that scenario, it's like, again, because remember, Adam also isn't like a guy, the rookie. He's also 22 now, guys. He's not 19 anymore. He's 22 years old. He's been in the league a long time. He clearly has a very strong perspective. And he's on that super shit. He does think he's the best as well. He like guys, I actually thinks he's cracked and he thinks he should be played through. I'd imagine that guy is asking you for fucking gags. By the way, they're also French. Like, I'm pretty sure he is telling him, like, come now, I can get him with the kill now. Like, but the problem is, I have to say, if I was Shio or the coaching staff of BDS, I would tell Adam, you literally are on an island, bro. Do your shit in those 1v1s. Try not to die too much, but yeah, you know, pressure if you want. Draw the enemy jungle all day long if you want, man. See if you can get out the gank. But we're not fucking sending Shio top, because the problem I have with that is, it's like you say, another nightmare if you're a jungler is, I can't be in three places at one time. And worst thing is, in the modern day, the second they spot me in one lane, they can make a cross map play. So even if I come and try to fix your lane, maybe now our advantage gets destroyed bot lane, or maybe they do the gank on Nuke the second I show on that river ward, like, oh fuck, and then they go in on him or TP in on him. Like, I feel like the problem is, Adam, when he's on his game, provides like a weird sort of like a... Last split, he was the main carry, but in the last years, if you think when they had Crowdy, he was more like sort of like a weird insurance policy. It's like what you said about Photon. It's like you're playing through bot, but he might fuck around sometimes, Adam, and have a game on his champs where he can win you the game too. He can do some moves. Now I feel like he's a little bit of a liability.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely not the same as he was, at least last split. I don't know if it's affected because of the whole bench situation. But I think about Adam as well is that you kind of have to play around him. And the thing is, like, if you want to do, like, you say, like, okay, let's drop him, Shio, just go bot, then Adam, it will actually just keep running it until you actually lose the game. So it's like, kind of like when Adam gets ahead and you do get him ahead, then he looks really good and he will actually look to carry you games, a lot of the games. But that's the thing. It's just how he plays the game. It's a very like aggressive way of seeing the laning phase. Like he wants to push his advantages every single time. And that will backfire a lot of times as well, especially when that Ice is the carry. And I think he's had a very hard time accepting that kind of role where he has to lie back and be kind of like just waiting for Ice to actually carry the game. Or, okay, team is just playing for Drake. I will just lay back. And he doesn't really know how to do that yet. And I think that's why also it looks like Shiyu has to go top, because if he doesn't, then it might just become like, instead of just a little match being flamed, like the whole house will burn down if you don't go there. Like you have to go there. And Shiyu's in a difficult position where he has to choose between, is it worth it? If I go top here, will my bot lane lose too much? Will we lose Dragon? So hopefully he like takes on Dragon and then he looks to help Adam, especially if he's gonna, I think also that's why they stopped playing this like Olaf and Darius, because I thought like, when G2 blinded the Sion, even though it was the lane swap thing, he didn't go into the Darius, which I thought like he would always do into Darius. Yep. I mean, it is a bit worse this meta because of the like Zeri and these kind of champ, but it was banned. So it seems to me like in scrims that they've been practicing like Adam more on weak side, we're going to play harder for bot side, and he's practicing that kind of style, which is a new style for him, where he has to kind of like lay back and just let his team carry, kind of like the old one style of how they used to play, which is a hard skill to teach. I think it's one of the hardest skills to teach as a top laner, to understand when you can play aggressive, like, oh, if I walk up here, I can bait enemy jungler and waste his time, so he's going to be top, so our bot lane can get an advantage.
Yes.
And that comes with a lot of experience and understanding. And I think Odawane and Wunder are like the two top top laners to understand this kind of like mind games of wasting enemy jungler's time and etc. And he doesn't just have that experience just yet. He just knows how to like roll over a lane and then snowball from that and call his jungler. So he doesn't think about that like bigger picture.
What about this then? There was one last thing on BDS I wanted to ask, which was this. I'm not going to go hard on the new one. It's not as bad. He just had some sort of whatever games. They were just a bit meh. Mate, if you're going to pick Azir every single game, here's the problem. When they first reworked the Azir, everyone was going, well, you know, it's not the same champion. It's not as strong. Guys, I'm watching these LTL, LCK and LPL games where the Azir are fucking dominating these games. Like they can do everything. You can be behind and they get the shuffle off in mid, get one guy into the tower, bring the carry away from their fucking peel. These Azirs can win or lose you the game massively in the East. When I watch Nuke play every game against G2, it's like, we're never going to get that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what's happened to his game. Where's this guy at?
I mean, I think first of all, like the meta changes, right? And that's like a big factor as well on the gameplay. But I think he's also not had like the best spring split like he had last year. I think he was one of the main carries in last year. Like his performances were insane. Like I remember playing like Syndra and stuff like this. Yes. He almost brought them to Worlds and he got like the credit for that. I think as this meta is more about like Azir, and then bot lane has become so impactful in the way that you're not really playing around mid. But one thing to also keep in mind is like when you're playing against G2, they're not going to give you those like random fights where Nuke is going to get like super fed or run into him. But I actually think I have a prediction. I think he's going to have like a really good series versus Fnatic just because of how they play. I think he's just going to get like randomly fed and he's just going to look like, you know, peak performance again.
Right.
And that's just my prediction. But I think versus G2, like if you remember the game, like he runs top lane to cover the dive and then dies, and then runs top lane again to cover the dive and then dies. It's like they were just brain gapped by G2 completely. And I think it's really hard to actually look good when you can't do anything versus them, especially if they're just smarter around the map and they know how to play the game and they choose which fights you are going to take.
Yes.
But it was a very, like, he was kind of invisible in that series, but I think the whole team was just invisible because they were just getting out-rotated the entire game.
He's also another player, in my opinion, that the coaching staff is just very, very shrewd in reading what his... Whatever they say in interviews, I don't care, because in interviews you pump people up. Privately, I can tell they know his strengths and weaknesses, and that's one of the other reasons why they sort of, like, somewhat band-aid his champion pool when they have to. Because this guy is the guy who's the defining factor of, like, I sort of need to play a little bit chill. If you come into me, then I can get, like... I'll take what you give me, basically, in this scenario. Because, actually, if you remember earlier in the upper bracket of the playoffs, he had that absolutely abomination Syndra game, mate, where he tried doing shit like roam bot and then it do all his combo, and then you could tell it was almost like, what the fuck, he's not dead. And it's like, bro, you don't even know how much damage that does. Like, holy shit, like you can't make aggressive plays if you don't know these things. Like, you've got to have like a sense for those. As an aggressive player, he just doesn't check out for me. He's not a bad player, but you know what, here's the problem. I always want the guy who's like a stud. I want the guy, like, I might hate on Humanoid for his int games, but at his peak, it's fucking sick, isn't it? Like, you're watching him play on the edge of his mechanics. He will kill everyone.
Yeah, No, when Humanoid's at his peak as well, then he looks like he can contest caps. Like, he's one of the few players in EU that can actually do it. But when Nuke was playing well, like, last year, it looked more like the whole team was just playing really well.
Right.
Like, they were all on the same page, and Nuke was being, like, everyone was giving him the resources that he needs to play aggressive, and then Nuke can actually pop off. Like, he had some insane, like, Tristana games last year as well, yep. And stuff like that, where he really looks like he's on form. So I think he's just kind of the player that, like, if his team is doing well, then he will do well. If his team is doing worse, and they have no idea what to do in game, then he just looks worse as well, because he has to take the role probably of, like, actually leading the team and calling where to go, etc. And I just think he needs to be in a state where his team knows what he's doing, and he's able to just focus on his lane, and then has it. And also the meta has to be, like, good for him as well. Because I think this meta is not, like, that nice. I mean, there's Azir, and now Aurelia's Soul comes in as well, and it's, like, new matchups, etc. But, yeah, I'm not really sure where to put, like, Nuke as a player. I thought they had a really good last year. This year is not as impressive. But we'll see, like, during the playoffs, if he's actually going to come back to a decent form. But it's heavily reliant on Shio as well, doing well.
If the narrative around G2 already was, like, essentially hand them the trophy, no one could beat them, they win every scrim. You know, if you notice nowadays, people, it's hard to even actually call them out if they had a bad game or they did a stupid draft, because it just feels like they're just experimenting in scrims, but those are stage games now, if you know what I mean. But here's what I will say that tells me, I don't think anyone else believes they can actually beat G2, was that fucking BDS lane swap that is the big drama. I'm not going to get into the drama or whether or not it was leaked. Yeah, yeah. Here's the reason why that is a terrible sign for the LEC. Because, guys, if you actually go and look at where the BDS players had to go, let's say it wasn't known and they were just gambling that this was the right call based on what they initially saw, that this was the counter to the invade, right? The gamble positions they took, this is where fans will never understand. You have to be able to imagine, this is where ProView would be so sick. You have to be able to imagine it without the fog of war of the rest of it, right? You can only see what they can see. The gambles they took, look, they actually lost this game anyway, but they were working early. But that only works if G2 does exactly that. If G2 doesn't, you have taken such a crazy gamble with your starting positions on the map, you might just put yourself completely behind in the game. Like, you could essentially, not like straight lose the game, but you put yourself in a really bad spot taking up those positions. So, like, if you're going to do that in a game against them in the playoffs, that almost suggests to me that you don't think you can beat them playing normal League of Legends. You can't just do a normal draft, a normal lane phase, get ahead in one lane, but you don't think you can do that. You think you have to do crazy gambles, because that's something you do in a B1 game. They did that in a playoff game. It worked, but I was thinking to myself the whole time, dude, what if you've guessed wrong? What if that's just a jungler and someone's going, you know what I mean? Like, that, what did you think? You're a jungler, you know what those setups are like. They're weird, right?
I mean, the thing is, it's kind of funny because I used to play in the lane swap meta back then, and it was, that's the kind of thing about lane swaps in general. It's a lot of mind games of knowing, like, oh, they're going to swap this game, so they're going to go top, but they know that we are also going to go top and match them, so we actually go bot. And it's kind of like, you have to kind of play those kind of mind games. So I think, like, the gamble they took, I think it's not relatively that big of a risk. It is a risk if they actually do go bot, but I think it's relatively safe to assume that they will actually look to a swap, because they have, like, losing top, losing bot lane, hard losing bot lane, and enemy team has a Volibear. So it's, like, worst case, okay, you do mismatch, but then you just have to run bot, I guess, and you will lose some CS, but you will at least be able to play the game normally. But I just think, like, lane swaps are super fun to watch.
Oh,
like,
sure.
I don't want to go full in on the drama about, like...
No, don't worry about that.
But I just want to say something about, like, how refreshing it is to see G2 just do, like, a lane swap and stuff like this. Because for years now, I've been watching, like, LEC, and it's always, like, oh, LCK, okay, they play like this and they do this, okay, we copy, and we're just worse version of, like, LPL and LCK. Like, we're always going to be worse trying to beat them at their own game. So it's just really refreshing to me to see, like, G2 even this split, like, being the first to pull out the Rek'Sai top, being the first to pull out the Zac top, I think. I'm not sure if it was the first, but they're, like, willing to innovate, they're willing to change and be creative. Like, we're not going to have this, like, oh, let's just keep doing what the LCK are doing. Oh, they played the Shovi, played Aurelion Soul. I think it's good now. And we just copy. Like, we're never going to win like that. So I was just really happy to see, like, the lane swap and actually making the game, like, somewhat interesting. Because if we can't beat the Koreans 2v2, let's just not lane versus them. And let's do a lane swap. And it's just perfect to me. I think it might actually be, like, if we can perfect this kind of lane swap or other strategies, might actually have a chance. We might catch some teams off guard, like do a lane swap, but they're not ready for it. Because teams who, at least back then as well, like teams who actually know how to play lane swaps, they just had the edge. Like Giants in 2016, they only lane swapped every single game, and they were top two in the regular season. And then they removed the lane swap in playoffs, and they became the bottom tier team. So it's like, if you're able to actually do the lane swap properly and you're able to play these kind of mind games, it's super, super fun to watch, at least when you understand it, but can be boring as a viewer for sure.
No, no, so if people...
I really love that series. I just want to say, I really love that series.
If like, people overall. Don't know the history, as you said, Riot were literally the ones who disabled lane swap. They made like the fucking tower, take them all on the top one, and then they eventually went to a plate, so obviously that philosophy's continued on. But the other thing is, what people forget always is this. Europe were the ones who mastered that shit first. And then literally even Koreans had to come and look at the gear, at the fucking VODs and start figuring out themselves. They weren't doing that shit actually. When Europe did it every game, Korea didn't. And so I agree with you, especially because G2's the one that's like willing to do it. Well, G2 already has the best draft and probably the most champions available because of their players. Yeah. But like they're fantastically GM team. This is actually the one where I agree with you. I could see Dylan Falco at least having a game, which otherwise you might have had like a hard time in the draft against. Like you think of like a BLG, you're going to have a hard time drifting a winning comp against them. But I tell you what, if you do some crazy lane swap and you gamble and it pays off, now there's suddenly a game that they're not prepared for. They don't know what it's like to be in this weird scenario. Like, well, I thought we had the winning lane there. I thought this match, we planned out the jungler to come at this point. That could give you a game. That could get you a game in a series.
No, but that's the thing also that's very underrated when it comes to League of Legends, like pro play. Making the enemy team react to you and play your own game, like making them play your game, they're always going to lose at that. Like if you're able to force the enemy team to play your game, like you're always going to have the advantage because you have more experience on it. You have more like knowledge about the lane swaps or even forget the lane swaps, like whatever you do in League of Legends. If you're able to force the enemy team to react to you, and this is one way to actually do it, is always by swapping. I mean, even if you're swapping your bot lane into top, etc., like just forcing the enemy team to react to you, you're always going to have the edge when it comes to playing. So I'm just really happy to see that we're getting creative, we're trying some stuff, and the G2 obviously is the only team, like, I would be shit scared if I was drafting versus G2 now. Like, let's say Dylan Falco has a bad day, he does a terrible draft, it's like, oh, well, it's fine, let's just lane swap. It's like, what do you expect about these guys now? Like, now that they've shown it too, like, how do you beat these guys? It's impossible. It's like, even if you, like, mindlessly, like, try to outdraft Dylan Falco, and that's pretty impossible with G2's champion pool, but let's say you manage to do it, they can just lane swap out of nowhere. Yes. And now you have to, like, go into a game, and how are you going to practice lane swaps? You barely can do the basics in scrims, and you're constantly, practicing like the most basic shit in scrims, like, oh, we need to learn how to set up Dragon. It's like, you don't have time to practice lane swaps. Like, you can't even crawl, and you're trying to walk. So it's just I just think G2 are gonna roll over anyone in the finals, and there's just no contest in that sense.
It's why I also think the other teams have to fix the roster first and foremost, like how you play. Because Dylan Falco already was, if all the players say this in my interviews, they say he's the best at baiting the pick, as in he purposely leaves that pick open. That is one of your best picks and is what you build your comp around. But because when you pick it, he's got like four different counters built out from that. And then even though you end up getting a couple of your picks, he ends up with the better comp or the one that counters that or doesn't allow that champion to do what it wants to do. He's already good at that. And then because he's got all the best players almost, he's got the lonely champion Ocean to pick from. So his solutions to what you're going to do are all over the place. Meanwhile, think of some of the teams we were talking about earlier. Most of the other teams, we're talking about actually being pretty cynical drafting if you're a BDS, if you're Fnatic probably even. Some of these squads out there, you can't just pick any champion in the game and you can't just switch comp halfway into the draft either. You've got to sort of see it through. That's what you practiced. There, that's another thing about having inexperienced players. You can't just throw them in a game with champions they've never played before and go just win against G2. They're not going to do it. There was always going to be that edge for G2.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just think that's why also no team will ever be able to contest G2 with the current rosters that we have. Like, I think Vitality could, if they just make that little tweak, I think Vitality could actually be a top contender. Like, they have the strong enough individual skill, but they just lack that, like, explosiveness from jungle, per se. Not the Flame Douglas. Yeah, but it's just like, if we just tweak the rosters a little bit and make them, like, more complementary towards each other, then I think we could actually have, instead of just having like, I don't know, like 8 dysfunctional teams, we would actually just have like clear top 4, top 5 like teams that would actually look to, we would be happy to send them to Worlds. We'd be like, these guys are our best and they can like do really good. But instead, every team we send to Worlds, like, yeah, these guys are good, but they have clear weaknesses. But it's like, yeah, I think if we can just fix that, then the EU future might actually look good. And we stop giving rookies like 8 years of playtime to see when they will develop, then I think we might have a chance.
And then the last factor, because it's an obvious one, but you have, if you're going to go week to week on a show like this, guys, we have to wax lyrical about who does well. The one other chance you at least had in some of the past splits, last year especially, was there'd be times when Caps would just have an all right series, or he'd just pick a better champion and not go out. Mate, it feels like now, like he can just do whatever he wants. Like, he goes fucking, this is like old Caps. He just goes super hard many times he wants. It fucking works, mate. He's too good.
No, he looks like old peak form Caps, or he's peaking right now. Like, I have no idea, but there used to be the meme of like, oh, Craps, like he used to play really bad and he was really inconsistent like back then. But now he just looks like on form. Like, there's just nothing that can beat him. He beats everyone in lane. He completely carries every single team fight. And he also, like, the thing I saw when he was like playing versus BDS as well, is like, he goes top and dives a humanoid. Then he runs straight bot, and then he just kills the enemy bot lane as well. And he's just all over the place on his Aurelion solo. And it's like, holy fuck. Like, I'm so glad we have Caps. Like, any team with Caps is just, it's just automatically going to become the top one team. Like, except the Reckless and Caps, the G2 split. Besides them, that guy has gone to the finals every single time. Like, he's by far, like, the GOAT, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, this region is run by Caps.
Right. And obviously, as much as we praised all the other aspects of G2 and the draft, he's also a massive chance to win. Listen, again, you're not going to like just straight up win a best of five. Like, if you actually play against like BLG, you're playing against Knight, or you play against, I don't know, it could be top esports, yet Cream's pretty good. Like, the difference is he actually is capable. He can give you at least a game. He can have a game he takes over and gets ahead and has the right pick. You get some picks for him. Like, that's another thing. Yeah. If you're a European fan or a Western fan, this guy gives you a reason to at least watch these games.
Yeah, for sure. Like, if I see Caps versus Knight or Caps versus Faker or whatever, I'd be like, okay, there is a chance, you know? But if you see, like, I don't know. Okay, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not
certain other mid laners, let's just say. Yeah.
But let's just say another mid laner, you'd be like, oh, shit, man. You know, like, we're just eventually going to get ran over. But when you see, like, Caps, you're like, okay, I mean, this guy will be able to contest, at least go, like, 50-50, or he might even win the lane. Like, so, yeah, that's, like, the hope that we have. Like, the shining light of our region is legit Caps.
Right, and like,
it's just fun to watch.
Like true jungle mains, when you're sick of it all and it's basically over, you just quit.